Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. Join us on our journey into the past, the present, and the future as we explore the relationship between technology and humanity. Together, we are going to find out what it means to live in a society where everything is connected and the only constant is change. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Cleaning up. This is what I did this morning. We were having problem with my connection. We were trying to figure out what my computer and also been like looking at all the stuff that may have been dragging down my network. So I had the same thought you had. I'm gonna clean up. I'm gonna reboot from scratch and reinstall everything on the Mac and just put a few things there, like a browser. That's all I need, and then I do everything else on the iPad. But anyway, hopefully, it's crossing finger. I got the guilty one, and I'm gonna be good.
Yeah, but you know what I love to take advantage of is when there's a new operating system. And I remember back in the day before I had a Mac, I was on Windows for the longest time. And I remember whenever there was like, you know, the jump to XP or 2000 or whatever, would always just go and use that as a moment to do house cleaning. I remember disk defragmenter. How many of you guys remember that?
Making fun of that the other day. Defrag.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, exactly. Like, what was that thing? Contiguous blocks or whatever it is, or defragmented blocks. And I would always remember, just way younger in my life, just every time there was a new operating system, I would use that as an opportunity to just rebuild everything. No clue why. Just keep it clean, keep it pristine or whatever. And it's funny, I've kind of taken that approach almost to this age where every now and then when there's a new operating system update, it's much easier now to do it because I think most of us have data that lives in the cloud, right? Where we can make that.
The question is it ever going to be an opportunity like that? Because we're so interconnected that who knows if you can really have a clean start somewhere, even with a new operating system, who knows? And sure, Sean, I think we're already going here, right?
Yeah. So this is I don't know if it's a clear connection to our past conversation, but it certainly is connected. We ended up part one of this conversation in a somewhat dystopian view of a world of multiple internets and everybody having their fingers on the policies and the controls over what citizens can and can't do with their data. And if you want access to stuff, you have to give up control of your information. And the bottom line is that has a direct impact on how companies do business, right? How they build their software and their services and their products and whatnot, and how they collect and manage their data and how they interact with their customers.
Yeah. But you know what? If I remember well, and I invite everybody listening to this to go to episode one, which doesn't necessarily you don't have to listen to this and don't stop listening to this now. You keep going, please. Keep going.
It'll make all sense. Need part one for this one to make sense.
No, but you know, it will give you a nice 360 view on where our brain was. And our brain, Sean, it's not, I mean, it's all right, but you know who I'd like to make this have this conversation with is Kunal. And luckily, he is back.
He's back. He's taking a moment to connect with us.
I got a question for you guys. When you said number one, and this is the nerd card, I guess, here, are we looking at it like in Star Wars episodes? Was that episode four? Is this episode five?
Right.
Is this the Empire Strikes Back?
The dystopian end was presented first. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Sean knows where I'm going with this.
You kind of give me an idea. Maybe the last episode will be the first one. And then we start fishing back and we never stop. I mean, hey, they got something right there in that franchise.
Disney or Lucas, right? They know what they were doing.
Exactly. Yep. Well, hopefully that's an inspiration for us.
Yeah. So let's get into it. So, I mean, the thing you were just describing, Kunal, is this, I'll call it the sprawl of our digital lives, where we just continue to add on and add on, and We tend to get a new computer and a new phone. We never get rid of the old ones. They just kind of live around. We add more products and services and we connect to more things and more people. And it just grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. And it's hard to maintain. It's hard to record keep all of that, hard to maintain all of that as a consumer or as a customer. Equally challenging are how organizations maintain all that. And obviously companies buy other companies and they get their data and their products. And so there's sprawl on that perspective as well. So I think what we want to spend our time today is kind of bring it back to how organizations and then ultimately how consumers interact with those organizations in a way where we can manage that sprawl, where we can manage our data, where we can say this is what we want to do on both sides of the coin.
I like that. I mean, if you think about it, the first episode we did is more of like a macro, really talking about the economy of information. And this sort of second episode dives deeper into organizations, the organizational side of the challenge here. And then if there's a third one, if there's a Return of the Jedi, then that one may focus on the consumer side, .. Yeah. Who knows?
Hope we have consumers live on to that point. Yeah.
Where we left off last time was really interesting because we were just about to scratch the surface regarding what organizations have to go through. The big challenge that we see today regarding data and data security is, first and foremost, organizations just don't know the information they have. We work with and I get to connect with lots of organizations of all sizes. The smaller ones have a better grasp of it because they don't have that much data. They're not collecting that much information. The challenge is when you become a really large organization, you're collecting data from lots of places. Could be your customer data, could be partner data, could be internal data that's being generated, could be things that you're collecting, could be things that people are pushing to you, information that's also being retrieved. And it's not uncommon for these large organizations to have lots of data ponds and data lakes. And with rogue IT, you may have data stores in places that you just didn't even think of. And it's one of the bigger issues that I think a lot of organizations have today is they don't necessarily know where all that information is. And so how can you protect how can you protect something that you don't know much about? How can you protect the invisible, right? And it's funny because when I've been in this industry for quite some time, and I approach this industry from the realm of application security. But why do apps exist? Well, they exist for the data, right? Go back to that whole concept. Networks exist to bring people to apps. Apps exist to bring people to data. And apps, whether you want to call them web applications, workloads, whatever, APIs, microservices, you pick whatever you want. Those things are being deployed at a scale that we just have never seen before. There are now more paths to access information today. It's funny, we were looking at our own network recently. You guys know how big and the scale that we're working at is. We see a lot of requests today that are trying to detonate payloads inside of APIs and microservices. Those have become the new weak links to get access to data. And so the first thing that we've started to see is a rise in things like SQL injection, LFI, remote code injection, remote code execution, basically people that are trying to design payloads that are going to just do one thing inside of the application or the API that gets compromised, which is to get access to the data. And that's just a newer path that exists today because, for the longest time, someone coming from the AppSec world, it was always about stopping XSS or SQLi or whatever it was. But you didn't really understand that people weren't just out to do these things just to do these things. Maybe they were in the early days where it was just kind of script kiddies, proof of concept. We all kind of came up through it. I say wink, wink, we all. But it's really beyond that now, where people are really trying to steal information. They want to get access to that information. They don't just want to tamper it. They want it because there's value in it. So there's a lot to talk about here.
Yeah. And let me get a little bit abstract here in a way that, are we too deep into this? Meaning people now are trying to find information that the company may not even know, as you said, that they have it. And if you don't have, you have something, how are you going to protect that? So that's problem number one. And my question is, It's kind of like when you go back to the conversation from last time, you know, we were excited about one internet that globalized our knowledge or our connection and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden is multiple internet. So why do you think that we didn't see this data problem coming? Is it because we just go for it and then human, you know, when I hit a wall, I'm just going to bounce back, or just went to a tangent that just we didn't expect?
I love this. Well, there's multiple ways to try and answer it. One is, let's assume that everyone has good intentions, and let's assume that, and I like giving, I'm an optimist, you guys know that, and I like to assume the good in people. Let's assume that this was just not neglected, it's just something that grew rapidly, and that there's more opportunities to collect data now and do something with the data now than ever before. Just because you can store data doesn't mean that you should. And I think many organizations fall into the camp where they just assume that, oh, we need the data for algorithms, data science, or whatever it is. We need this piece of information. Who knows why? And I think a lot of that just grew over time. And with the early 2000s and what we've seen with the web increasing in popularity, more and more organizations prompted you for more information. We were talking about this in the pre-recording or in the session right before we jumped into recording this. Many people don't even know how much information they've already given to many of these companies. I got myself one of the new Apple M1 laptops recently, and we were talking about how much of a purist I am. I installed my password manager, and I'm going through my password manager, and I identified 400 plus accounts that I've created all over the internet. And I wanted to slim that down because that number blew my mind. And as I was going through the process, I hadn't realized how much information I had surrendered or I had given about myself. And it's beyond first name and last name. In certain cases, it was the address. In certain other cases, it was my birthday. You know, it's super sensitive information. And we surrender a lot of this information. Now you got to ask yourself as the consumer, is that actually held by the site? How do I know they're doing the right thing with the data? How do I know that my data is actually being deleted? So, I mean, I went through the process over the last few weeks. I've been deleting accounts left and right, old things, legacy things, things I don't even know of. It's funny how many companies or startups are just out of business now, so you can't even go back to delete those things. But for those that are still in existence, man, that process was so eye-opening to me. And I have no faith that where I deleted my information from was actually honored, like those requests were actually honored. I mean, there's no way to know. And I'll tell you what makes it even more lame, and you'll appreciate this. I would sometimes go through the process. And again, I deleted 200 plus things in the last couple of weeks. When I say things, accounts. As I was going through the process of deleting accounts, these lame companies would put me on their mailing lists. So not only would I go through and delete the account, they would put me on their mailing lists. The audacity, right? To like not only close your account, to delete your username or your email address and all information associated with it, but then they put me on a mailing list. You didn't do what I wanted you to do. And now I have no faith that you actually honored the request that I had, which was to delete my account in the very first place. That has to be in violation of something.
Do you know how many times, sorry, I got to say this, because you know how many times I have thought and I haven't unsubscribed myself, because it's kind of like answering the phone. I'm telling them that I do actually exist.
There you go.
And that's not right at all.
There you go. And I like what you just said is true. It's why do people not pick up when they see an unknown number? Well, they don't want to show that that's an active line. So they let it go to voicemail or whatever it is. There's another person in our industry. I'll connect you to him later on. It reminds me of something interesting. And he actually, for his voicemail, he recorded the phone number is discontinued or out of service. And he set that as his voicemail. And it's so amazing because if he doesn't know the number, he lets it go to voicemail and that number shows up. And here's what's actually kind of funny. There's so much pattern recognition and audio recognition from some of these you know, spam houses or sort of robocallers, where when they hear that, they're like, oh, number's disconnected, let it go. And I don't know if they do OCR or if they're just pattern matching, but I thought it was really interesting. It's a really cool hack. But, and maybe something if you, for those listening that are getting DDoSed from over voice, try it out. Might help you out a little bit.
Nice one. I think that's a tip we can all follow. So I wanted to talk about so many directions to take this. I'm going to bring this a little technical, because you talked about networks connecting things and apps giving access to data, and you talked about APIs and microservices, and we typically think of apps as an interface, a user interface, a graphical interface that gives us a way to view our data and manipulate it and save it somewhere. And I think it's interesting, and I'd like your perspective on this, because everything else is sprawling, we can't keep up with all the stuff we have to do. So what do? We turn to computers again and technology to help us with that. And hence the APIs and microservices that allow stuff to do things on our behalf and on our company's behalf and our partner's behalf without a user actually touching anything. And so I'm wondering how, and as you were telling your story there, and as I was thinking about the APIs and microservices, I was thinking about a user that may put in name, address, and phone number, which is enough for a company to look up public records to augment those bits that you gave them access to with other information that may help them, quote unquote, provide a better service. So, right, through APIs and other microservices. How do we know what's being accessed through means other than the UI that we're connecting to? Well, ethically, I think there's probably something we can say to that, but legally, is there anything that companies have to be aware of?
Well, there's great regulations or things regarding compliance that organizations have to be more mindful of. We touched on it last time with things like GDPR and CCPA, and California, as part of one of the latest, most recent propositions, were the state that we're in. They basically are asking some of these tech companies to provide more transparency around what exactly is being collected, what exactly is going on with this information. When we give this information to companies, and it took me a while to get to this, and it really hit home over the last few weeks as I was going through this, when we give this information to someone, we just have to assume that it's gone. From a threat model perspective, we just have to assume that that information is out there now publicly. Because it doesn't matter if that individual company gets compromised, or if they don't, if they have, let's say, have the strongest security, they're part of a supply chain. And their data, the data that you gave them, may be used by someone else. Financial services is a great example of this, right? Credit bureaus, another great example of this, where your data lives anywhere and everywhere. And there's some clearinghouses, there are the bureaus, there's credit card processors. There's so many folks in the overall exchange of that information that have your information. How do you know that your information is well kept? How do you know that when you provided your information to someone, you agreed and they agreed that they would be good custodians of your data? But if they work with a partner or a third party, how do you know they're going to be good custodians of your data? How do you even know that your data went over there to the other side? Did you consent to that? And now there's terms and conditions that no one reads. There's privacy policies that no one really takes the time to read, because they're not in simple English. Most people don't take the time to do it because they don't understand the legalese that's involved there. So one thing that could be beneficial is we start at the very beginning and we're very upfront. Businesses should be very upfront as to what information they're collecting, why exactly they need that information. And consumers also need to step up and realize that, you know what, I actually don't want to give you that information. And maybe use that as a moment to reconsider why you want to join a service. Maybe use that as an opportunity to think about something else. I mean, good example, social media, whether it's Snapchat or TikTok. Why do they ask you for your gender, and why does that matter? Why do you have to give that information up?
Advertising.
Yeah, Yeah, right. But I understand birthday because you have to potentially deal with compliance, what you can and can't see, whatever that may be. But it's a gray line. And I think too many people are too trusting of large organizations and organizations in general when it comes to storing their information. Oh, they'll do the right thing. They're too big. They're never going to have a problem, or they would always do the right thing regarding my data. I think we've been proven wrong time and time again, and we're always shocked when we find out X big company wasn't doing the right thing with encryption at rest, or X big company didn't know that they had this information still, or X big company didn't know that this data lived in an S3 bucket somewhere, right? We've seen all of those things in the last few years, and it just keeps happening repeatedly. So there's one thing that the consumer can do, which is starting to be more discerning of these services and really asking themselves, why would they want to go there? I think that's going to be a huge part of this. And of course, these companies need to step up and show more. I mean, next to the privacy policy in terms of service page, wouldn't it be pretty cool if there was a link down there where you could maybe put in your user information and you could get back all the information that the company has about you, or whether if there was a live way to see exactly what's where, whether that's through like a clearinghouse or something, without this turning into a vendor-y discussion, which it shouldn't be. There's so many opportunities to bring more visibility and transparency to the table, and we have the tech to do it. It's just a shame that we're not flexing that muscle.
And I definitely want to touch on that as we get into this more. And I know we're also looking at this from the consumer, and I'm gonna switch gears on this a little bit in a second. But we've talked about this before in previous conversations with you and other folks. In fact, that if you use the birth date, for example, if the goal is to make a decision on whether to show or display something or not, or allow you access to or not based on one's age, are they really looking up the birth date to confirm that that is the actual birth date? So isn't an attestation of just saying, yes, I'm old enough without actually collecting the birth date?
I love that. Right? I love that. And you could actually argue that you could do the computation client side.
Right.
And rather than providing the birthday,
exactly,
you can send some sort of hash or some representation of the person being of age, maybe or of consent or of a particular age, where they can opt in automatically to a certain subset of content, set some enumeration, and then set some date of when maybe that enumeration flips. Maybe you set a scheduled job on the back end. I don't know. There's so many different ways that we can handle this. But that computation could be done on the front end with the user, and that information truly doesn't have to leave the front end. You could compute and then send the appropriate hash up to the back end.
Exactly. So I don't think we're using technology, and the data is there to collect, so it's easy to collect it and then make decisions else in other ways other than using the technology to
achieve. Take passwords. Uh-huh. Take passwords. Great example. Like, why do we send the plain text password back? Like when you go and create an account, like
I have a better question. Why do we use still password anyway? I mean, look, all these things that you guys said make me think a few things. One, how many times can they steal your identity? Once your identity is out, can you put it back in the bag? Number one, when your information is out with this web of third-party vendors and company that share data between advertising network and other partners and so forth, even if that company is going to remove your information, there is going to be shadows of that information in a lot of different places. So the big question for me is, how do you have a complete cleanup of the hard drive reinstalled from scratch, but not to reinstall the same operating system with the same problem? I mean, is there a different angle that we can use to protect and use data? Because, I mean, business do need data to serve you what you want. I mean, let's not be crazy. You can't have artificial intelligence assistant unless they know what I do, what I want, and so forth. So, but how do I stop that from going out in the open? Because when it's out, it's out.
I just think organizations can change the way that they approach data security. And I think what Sean was trying to get at the onset of this is, from an organizational perspective, what can they do? I mean, really cleanly, starts with discovery, starts with understanding where your information is. They should be doing this continuously. Every organization continuously should be looking for and hunting for their information, wherever it is. That's step one. Step two, great, you found the data. Now what's in it? Someone actually has to do the classification. Someone actually has to go through and determine whether or not there is sensitive information in there. There's two approaches from a technical perspective that we see today as an industry. One is metadata analysis or metadata classification, where you kind of look at a database column, and if it says first name, you assume that's the first name, and therefore there's PII in here. There's other approaches that you can take, like actual data classification, where you don't, maybe you can infer from the metadata, and that's a good hint, but some organizations, they have data fields, you know, like arbitrary field names, and you don't really know if that's going to be first name, last name, or whatever. So you can do regular data classification. Some machine learning gets applied. Dictionaries get used, right? So if you've got a large corporate or a corpus of first name, last names, you can just reference those or use those if you wanted to do that kind of classification. So that's part one. And two, discover, then classify all that stuff. Then you get to the next part of it, which is a great. Now I've identified all my data. I've identified what's sensitive in there. Next part, let's go back and let's actually see who has access to that information. So let's now see, is it Marco? Is it Sean? Is it a DBA? Is it beyond a specific user account? Maybe it's a group of users that we have to worry about. Maybe it's users that are over-provisioned from an application, right? So then you start to map, okay, who has access to this information? Then after you do that, then you start to understand, okay, what privileged access do these users have? So now you have to really understand, can they access the sensitive information? Like, just because Marco can access the database, does Marco have the ability to go and access this one field inside the database? And that's a nuance, but it's a really important thing. And then you go beyond that, which is, okay, great. So now I've identified the data. I know exactly what it is. Here are the list of users that have access. And here's the sort of revised list of users that have access to that specific sensitive information that I'm concerned about. Then you need to just know, and you have to audit how that information is being accessed. So you have to look at audit logs. They have to go somewhere. And then for the longest time as an industry, we've just been relying so much on humans that are threat hunting, right? Where you get this large amount of data, these audit logs, you dump it into a SIM, someone's got to go through, someone's got to look for it. It's so backwards, right? And you now think about credit card processor. Financial services company that has, you know, they're processing tens of thousands of transactions a second. Who's going to go through all that data? Like, what I find really impressive, and it's an interesting thing to think through, credit card fraud. You all and I, we've all been through, right? Someone steals our credit card information, they charge something. You'll notice like the charge goes through. Sometimes it goes through, but you get notified afterwards that something happened. So that sort of reconciliation, like what rules did it trigger in the back end? Or was there a human on the back end that was looking through this and was like, no, it's a little weird that Kunal's card got charged in Portugal, as an example, when the last charge that he made was in Boston. Why? You know, so there's Bayesian approaches. There's simple rules that can be applied. But you got to do something with that data. And that overall framework, I think, is what's really missing at many of these large organizations. Forget the tooling, forget the software, forget the vendor, forget all of that. Just go back to the process. Just go back from the very beginning. Do I know where all this information is? Do I know what I even have? Is any of it sensitive? Should any of this be redacted? Should any of this really be hashed? Should it be encrypted? Am I doing the right thing from that perspective? Am I treating backups well? So many organizations do backups from production. Are they sanitizing their backups? Are they masking data from their production data? So many tech companies will go and actually take their production databases and run them in staging environments locally. It's a very common thing for tech companies. They do this all the time. Well, are they masking the data from production? Are they actually bringing real humans accounts locally? Are they bringing the customers table locally? Are they masking all of it? Are they rotating it? Are they obfuscating it? I mean, what are they doing with all of it? And there's so many unknowns here. And what's crazy is you go to an average organization, could be a big one, average one, even small one, and you ask them one simple question, which is, are you feeling really confident about your data security strategy? Everyone, every single one says, well, it could be better. Everyone will tell you that.
And Kunal, I want to get your perspective on this, because I almost feel like the respect for consumer data and the need to secure that and keep it private is, I would say the respect is limited and in many cases, non-existent. But if we look at it as a B2B, so forget the B2C for a minute, B2B, one business customer is a customer of another entity, right? So there's a B2C in that sense. There's a customer and a business. Businesses don't stand for misuse and a lack of respect for that relationship, right? There are contracts and agreements. Healthcare has tons of them. So we don't let businesses get away from that. And presumably, and this is where I want your thoughts on this, presumably all the things you just identified in terms of where is my data, what's sensitive, what matters, what am I doing to protect it, who has access, all those things you just described, we put a lot of pressure on companies to do the right thing there. And a lot of them do. Granted, it's driven by regulation. But when it comes to consumer, the same processes apply, yet we don't apply them. So I don't know that I necessarily want to question on why the consumer gets screwed here. But how do we get companies to realize that data protection is data protection, whether it's supply chain, you're doing an investigation and that investigation database is sensitive, we don't want that out, versus you have a customer table of consumers buying products and we don't want that to get out. How do we get companies to wrap their head around that data security is data security and the paths to it need to be protected?
So it's funny, I'm a new parent and we have discussions similar to this all the time with our kids. How do we reinforce good behavior and how do we sort of discipline when we see bad behavior or things that we just want to curb? It comes down to incentives. Companies, humans, we all act accordingly if incentives are aligned with our goal, our mission, or if it's just the way we want. Or if it's something that we want. So it's incentive-based. And I try not to think about it as in terms of like carrot and the stick, because it doesn't work. And what I see now more than ever before is people just openly said, like, if you guys remember GDPR, when that first happened and the EU went live with it, so many companies were like, yeah, we know we're not going to be compliant from day one. So what? I mean, seriously, there were companies that were like, so what? What are you going to do? And that was so mind-blowing considering how much time led up to it. The fact that this is coming, everyone needs to be aware of it. If you're not aware of it, there could be fines, there could be repercussions. I wonder if there are tricks or techniques or things that we could apply. Maybe this is an example as it's come riffing just now with you guys off the top of my head. If we identify an organization that is not treating your data well, or they're not doing the right thing with respect to treating your data, let's say there are multiple internets. Let's say there are service providers. Could we adjust their quality of service so that, you know what, you're not going to do the right thing with other people's data? We won't let you have the faster tubes, if that makes sense. And if you, I know it's weird to kind of look at it like that. It's very authoritarian too, but at some point we have to get these big companies. I mean, how else are you going to do it? Fines. You can fine these companies all you want, but you're just going to crush the smaller ones because the smaller ones don't know what to do. This is the big issue, is data security is so hard and it really penalizes the smaller businesses. The bigger companies have so many people. They've got dozens and dozens of people, hundreds of people that they may potentially deploy just to solve this one particular issue. I feel bad for the small, medium-sized businesses here because they're not data experts. They're not data security experts. And now you tell them that you got to do this right thing with encryption or masking or whatever. Suppose you're a mom and pop shop. You buy off the shelf product.
An encrypted mask? What? That sounds cool.
Yeah, they don't know what that means. They'll just say, well, I use Stripe for credit card processing. I got a MySQL database that someone set up, and then my orders live in this table over here. Well, now you got to make sure this information is encrypted at rest. Yeah. What does that mean?
That means two tablespoons of baking soda to one tablespoon of...
But you know, here's one thing. You can walk in that store, let's say this mom and pop shop or that office of a dentist, and you can kind of look, this is the business. This is what's happening. It's transparent in a certain way, to a certain level. So visibility could be the solution to all of this. Let's say that everybody operates in a glass ball, and look, if you're not doing the right thing, we can see you right here. And I know that this is probably not possible because there is privacy, there is the way we manage our business, there is freedom, there is a lot of things. But yet, when you talk about the stick and the carrots and how we educate people, unless they have to pay a price, I don't think you're getting any places. And you know what it makes me think? It makes me think about, we almost need a new social contract. Right? Okay, so no, everybody wants to be free, but as Jean-Jacques Rousseau said, you know, if you don't want to be free, I got to kind of force you to be free. And I know a lot of people don't like that, but the concept is there is a public interest, there is a bigger interest here than your personal interest. There is an entire economy, there is an entire society. And sorry, I went a little
deep. No, I love it. I love it. We're getting into an interesting area here, guys, because what we're basically getting to is we know this is an issue. We know that not every organization, that we've all been there, they don't treat our data correctly or appropriately. They don't safeguard all our information, and they may sell it. They may do the wrong things internally with it. God knows how many development environments our user accounts are on right now, based on the fact that devs may be snapshotting production and doing whatever it is that they're doing. That exists for sure. No, not, it just has to happen by the numbers. But again, you go back to, this stuff is really hard for a lot of organizations to wrap their heads around. The fact that the big companies have not solved this yet, what hope do we have for the smaller ones to get this right? We have to do a better job at democratizing security. This goes back to something that you and the three of us have been really talking about for years now, is we have to make this stuff more accessible. We have to demystify many of the things that is data and data security. And we have to make it easier for people to manage. I mean, over time, you guys know my philosophy coming from the RAS world was, let's load it in the language. Over time, I mean, I just feel like over time, programming languages will protect themselves. There will be secure runtimes. On the data side, can we add layers to our database platforms that help with transparency, can help with sensitive data management, can help with privacy? And so these larger organizations or smaller ones, doesn't matter who you are, you get the benefit of many of these capabilities now inherently built into the tooling. And so I think what I would love to see is more open source development, more security-minded hackers that are willing to build things out in the open or to try and make the existing things just a little bit more security-minded, have more security capabilities out of the box. So it really just helps more and more people. That sort of Robin Hood security hacker, if you will, I'd love to see that. And we as a world will absolutely benefit from it. With open source being so prevalent, so predominant, our lives are on open source. We're recording this webinar and we're all probably using an open source web browser. We're leveraging an open standard right now. Many of our smart headphones that we're wearing use open source in them. What if many of these things in the overall supply chain just were a little bit safer, right? So that's just my two cents here, which is, this is a hard problem. No one's really solved it. We have to democratize it. We got to make it easier for people. And how do we start just baking things in? How do we just and have this in from the very beginning. It's the contract. You're going to use this open source thing. You're going to have these security capabilities that come along for the ride with it. And so for the smaller businesses, fret not. Like, we've gotten you taken care of. You're doing the right thing from the very beginning. I'm optimistic, and maybe that's where we have to drive towards.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And as we wrap here, I think I'll sum it up if I can, Kunal, in that clearly visibility and transparency is key. I would say that your point of baking it in, I think business and tech are moving so fast. If we're forcing decisions to be made and delaying transactions, forcing decisions that put security and privacy at risk, then we're doing it the wrong way. So kind of figure out how to take those decisions off the table and just make it automatic, make it happen, I think is a good thing. I think the other thing that I'd like to call out is just because we like to see data as humans doesn't mean we need to interact with it at the machine level as human data. So any chance we can take to look at what information we're collecting and how we're using it to make decisions and abstract that, tokenize it, hash, whatever it is, right? If we can change that model some way so that we're not actually moving and storing sensitive data when we don't need to, I think that's another good thing to do. And I guess to Marco's point, social contract, if we can just take to heart that this stuff matters, I think maybe we have a better chance as well. I don't know.
Well, let's close with a positive note.
Yes.
With a lot of good and bad, we're still here. So here. Let's All believe right, no, that our social contract is somehow working. I just think that in this technology age, we can't refer to that one anymore. We need to reinvent a new one.
And here's an idea. No more carrot and stick. It's carrot and carrot cake.
Ooh, I love carrot cake.
Right?
Me too.
I love carrot
cake. Not enough carrot cake.
Yeah, happy holidays.
So many carrot cake haters in the world.
I love carrot cake.
Who doesn't like carrot cake?
You know, this is a good approach. It's like, look, yeah, you could do good, now do more good. You get the cake. Exactly. Then you get two cakes. Then you get to eat it and have it too. Wow, deep again.
But it just goes back to, I think we're all optimists. And I know we talk about dystopian futures all the time. We just love it. Can't get enough of our fiction. But I just go back to, we have genuinely smart and curious people on this planet. We've got people who care about making sure that people are respected and their information should be. And we can do more, and we should do more. And we're basically encouraging more people that are out there, could be in an organization or it could be independent developers, really think it through. And if you see opportunities to make things better, or if you are in your own organization, you know, if you work for a big company, you work for a big organization, just ask yourself, are we doing the right thing with customer data? And if you're not, no need to ring the alarms and bring 3-letter agencies in. You may at some point, but really use that as an opportunity to learn and improve. Use that as an opportunity to make your world better, your local world better. And of course, work with your attorneys and GCs, whatever you may need to on that side. But let's make the world a little bit better. And we can do it if we all start to care more about data and data security.
Yeah. I think this is a perfect opportunity. I mean, humans drive this, but this is a perfect opportunity for technology to help, right?
Totally.
Technology's got us to this point where all the data is there. I think it's an opportunity for it to help us. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a good message to end the year.
It is.
So carrot cake for everyone.
Carrot cake for everyone.
Who's going to say no to that one?
Who knows if there will be a trilogy?
If there is a trilogy, do me this. We'll communicate it all offline. I'll get your addresses. I will make sure that you all have very delicious carrot cake for the next one.
Nice.
Deal?
Deal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sweet.
Well,
indeed.
Kunal, it's always a pleasure having this kind of conversation and to see you, even if it's a podcast, but we get the honor to see you as well. So we really hang out somehow. And lovely. Thank you so very much.
Thank you guys. I always love chatting with you. And really looking forward to, if there is a Return of the Jedi, let's do it.
Looking forward to that.
All right, guys. Be well.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and this story made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.